This episode of the ABZ Football Podcast is sponsored by Siberia Bar and Hotel on Belmont Street, Aberdeen, located only 30 seconds from the nearest bus stop, taking supporters to Pittodrie for free on match days. Siberia is open 7 days a week, all year round. And to get fired in with our exclusive discount code, head to the bar and quote ABZPOD for a £3 pint of Foster's, a £4 pint of Moretti or Dark Fruits, or £5 for a pint of Fierce or Adake. That's any day of the week, including match days. And if you're with the little ones and are looking for a spot of pre or post match lunch, remember, under 18s are welcome in the bar with an adult, so make a day of it at Siberia. Come on, you Reds.
Red slight of foot there. Bakashina! 2-0 to Aberdeen!
It is Madison!
Hello and welcome along to episode 164 of the ABZ Football Podcast. Once again, I'm your host, fresh off the plane, Gary Scott. Joining me this evening is Graeme Steele, fresh after a pitch inspection on Friday evening, and Gavin J. Baxter. Gents, how are you both this evening?
Good, thank you. Looking forward to another exciting Dons update.
Gav?
It did not take three inspections of the highlights against Livingston for me to prepare for this one, I can tell you that much.
No, definitely not. Yeah, a bit of a shambolically put together recording this one. What changes there? But hey, here we go. We're going to take a look back at the 0-0 draw with Livingston in West Lothian on Saturday. We're going to discuss the latest news that's been coming out of AB24 in the last week or so. We'll check in with the young team. We'll preview our final pre-split Scottish Cinch Premiership fixture as we welcome Tony Docherty's Dundee side to Pittodrie on Saturday.
And manager then after of the month, Tony Docherty.
Is he?
Yep.
MOTM.
Motum, yep.
Is that just because he was able to source some pitch covers from Celtic at the last minute? Hold in a favour.
Very handy they got them in and put them down after it had been raining.
Exactly. Good stuff. Good stuff. And then after the break, we're going to check in with friend of the show, David McGregor, a.k.a. Broken Chanter, as we're going to catch up on all things Aberdeen from his perspective. And we'll get the lowdown on his new album, Chorus of Doubt. But first, Livingston 0, Aberdeen 0, 6th of April 2024 at the Tony Mac in the Cinch Scottish Premiership. Gents, let's be honest, there doesn't really seem to be a huge amount of point. That doesn't make sense. Does it now?
There's not much to talk about, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Oh my God, I'm so fucking tired. There doesn't seem to be much point in taking a huge amount of time to talk about the game on Saturday, because let's be honest, it was fuck all that happened. Peter Levine opting to stick with the same starting 11 that started against Ross County the week before. Dante Povara and Duke, despite their valuable contributions in that game, having to settle once more for a place on the bench. Angus McDonald returned to the matchday squad after illness in place of Johnny Hayes. Without wanting to put too many excuses out there for people, obviously, that pitch at the Tony Mac is absolutely fucking horrendous. Conditions on the day were also pretty poor. Strong winds, making it difficult for both sides to even try and attempt to play football. The Dons were, in fairness, it looked to me, poolside in Portugal anyway, on my Red TV international stream. So we were attempting to try and play a bit of football in that first half. The Dons with an excellent chance to take the lead in that first half. Graeme Shinney playing the ball into Leighton Clarkson, who in turn passed the ball through the centre of the Livy defence to Boye Miowski. One-on-one with Shamal George. The kind of chance that you'd kind of normally expect Miowski to take, but George doing well to smother Miowski. That meant that the teams went at halftime 0-0. Very, very little in that second half to talk about at all until basically the final moments of the game, when it looked as though we had snatched 3 points out of absolutely nowhere, with Clarkson floating a free kick into the back post there and McDonald keeping the ball alive. And after George came up with a decent stop to deny Stefan Gartman, Boye Miowski lashing the ball into the net with an acrobatic finish. And despite the celebrations being taking place at the Tony Mac there, that short-lived moment of joy ruled out after a lengthy VAR check ensured that there was a decision that ruled the goal out. Angus McDonald, it would appear to have been adjudged to have strayed offside when the ball was played in by Clarkson, although there doesn't appear to be any sort of concrete proof about that at all over the course of the weekend, indeed, VAR or the SFA refusing to release the lines to Sports Scene, I think it was, on
show
Saturday
us the lines.
Show us the fucking lines. Because it was apparently, what was it? They just basically said it was too obvious. Like, you didn't need to see the lines. But hey, there we go. Mental stuff. Fucking love it, this country. Just fucking great stuff.
I bet you we didn't pay for enough cloud storage to store the footage. That's what I mean.
Quite possibly. Yeah, not much to talk about this one. I mean, I think I put the poll up after the game on Saturday, but which 0-0 was worse, the opening day at Levy or this one? Perhaps maybe the opening day one, maybe just slightly edges that. I mean, boys, again, there's not a lot to talk about here, but just maybe in terms of the starting lineup, a little bit surprised because Duke and Polvara had done well when they came off the bench against Ross County the week before. So I was certainly a little bit surprised to see Polvara not start at the very least. I think the one thing you'll get with Livingston is they are, despite their position in the league, they're still very dogged in the centre of the park. It kind of felt like it was maybe a game where you just wanted to have a little bit more physicality in there. I wasn't too concerned about Duke maybe coming off the bench. I do think we're finding a little bit more joy with him coming on when maybe there's some tired legs, etc. But you boys a little bit surprised leaving decided to stick with the same lineup from County?
Not really, actually. Only on the basis that he, in the few games he's had in this sort of second spell, he's generally just picked the same team, with the exception of maybe Jensen and McDonald.
Which was illness.
I don't necessarily disagree that Povara possibly could have and or should have been in with a shout of starting, but I wasn't particularly surprised. In fact, so unsurprised that I got 11 out of 11 on my fan hub predictor.
Well, there you go. Are you going to be top fan this week, do you think? Or this
I might just put myself forward.
Yeah, fuck it, why not? Gav, a bit surprised with that one?
It was actually, yeah, just because of how well Dante Povara and Duke did coming off against County, and putting in pretty stark contrast to Junior Hoylett as of late. And, you know, I found Connor Barron pretty coming away with in games, not offering a huge amount, you know, always willing to pick up the ball, but not really doing anything to penetrate against the opposition. And I just thought Dante would provide a different kind of option defensively, offensively, set pieces. Yeah, so and Duke, you know, was very impressive when he came against County. And I'm thinking to myself, given the state Livingston are in, the form they're in, the batterings they've taken lately, going mega positive, even trying to get Duke up with Miowski, partner him at a strike force, would have been really good. So yeah, a little bit surprised. I guess maybe Peter Lee even just showing that he's much like Robson, like Goodwin, like McInnes, you know, is prepared to stick with the kind of tried and trusted no matter what. But yeah, I was certainly upset not to see Dante at least.
I mean, the game itself was such a poor spectacle. It's one of these, it's like, I think Gav, you said to me later on, I think when you went back to watch some of the highlights today, there was like 4 minutes tops on the SPFL website of highlights of this, 2 minutes of which were probably highlights or replays, should I say, of incidents. I mean, a real dearth of any sort of quality there. We really seem to struggle at the Tony Macaroni in recent seasons. I know there's a lot of people will talk about the pitch, but you know, when you go back through Livy's fixtures this season as well, they don't tend to ship a lot of goals at home, but most teams have gone to Livingston this season and been able to pick up wins. And we just always seem to struggle down there. And I can't quite put my finger on why that is.
You say that, but I think in the preview, we discussed this game and discussed that Livingston have conceded like 3 goals in each of their last, it's like three or four of the last 5 games. So they are shipping goals quite regularly. Yep. Obviously, they lost 3-0 to Celtic the week prior to this. So it's not the same dogged, resistant Livingston team that we've come to know since they've come back into the Scottish Premiership. So what the rhyme or the reason is as to why we just don't seem able to put it together, I don't know. I mean, yeah, like you said, conditions were difficult with the strong winds. I mean, obviously Edinburgh City's game against Montrose got called off and we kind of suffered through the conditions. And then the pitch itself is lamentable. But yeah, I mean that accounts for this game. Doesn't really account for the fact we haven't beaten them since what, Stephen Glass's first away game in the league?
Yeah.
When McKenzie spoons that shot into Strijek's hands. So yeah, I just think it comes down to like maybe selection as well, perhaps just a little bit negative, a little bit cautious. I do generally think that if we put Polvara and Duke in, we'd have thought about taking the game to them in a far more aggressive manner rather than letting them kind of get their foot on the ball and creating a couple more chances before we were able to get Miowski away through for his one-on-one opportunity in the first half. Yeah, interesting. Interesting one to look at as to why we seem to struggle at the Tony Mac.
Yeah, Graham, once again, though, VAR is the kind of only real talking point in this game. Miowski's goal late on. Looks like we've done it, a smash and grab at the Tony Mac, a la what we did with, as Gav's just touched on there, Jack McKenzie back in Stephen Glass's first full season, first away game. And then for that to be taken away, and I think the worst part about it is it just doesn't appear to be conclusive at all as to why the goal's been ruled out.
Yeah, I suppose there's two schools of thought. One, which is kind of the side I'm on, is, you know, if it's taking a controversial VAR offside decision to beat Livingston,
which is fair,
then that's a pretty poor state of affairs. But, and again, this is, it's not just in Scotland, but this sort of immunity that anyone in any sort of, it's not actually even not just necessarily officials, as in the match day officials in the VAR team, but just in general, actually anyone in a suit who runs the game is basically immune to criticism, it seems to be, and has absolutely no requirement to justify any decisions that they make. Now, even if they come out and said, look, don't know what happened, we've wrote it, I guess, wrong, doesn't change the outcome. But the idea is just shut it down. You know, if that really is true, that, you know, no one's been able to see the proper analysis and have it explained, then I just don't really see how your game can be run.
Well,
that sort of action, because all it leads to is the sort of conspiracy theories and the, you know, it's just really quite disappointing. That being said, it's Livingston, the bottom of the table, they're shite. And that's what we're talking about. That's not a great look for us.
Watching the game through Twitter, having been at Bank City instead of at the Tony Mac, we glory hunter that I am. You know, Johnny Main, our good friend, seemed to make it that he was certain that Angus was offside when the call was made. And having watched it a few times, you know, you never know exactly what the closest piece of Angus's body is that they're using to judge. But there's a body of players in the centre of the park, and it is difficult for me to see exactly where each player is and how they're judging this. So it's not crystal clear to me. And yeah, if they're in fact not releasing the lines, it would imply that, yeah, a call's been made that's, it's, you know, it's not been made through the right procedure. It's just been made through Angus is the closest player. He looks potentially offside, and so they made a pretty safe call rather than being bold and sticking with the on-field decision. Yeah, disappointing for sure.
It's such an odd one, isn't it? Because I think it goes back to, again, the level of investment that's gone into VAR in this country. Because if the only camera angle that they're working off of is that one that we've seen, I don't know how they can draw the lines to begin with, because you can't see. I think it's Mackay, isn't it? The number 11 for Livingston appears to be the deepest player. But as you say, Gab, he's in the middle of a gaggle of players in the centre of the park. There's no way from that camera angle you can see where you have to draw a line on his body part from which to make the call about whether or not Angus is on or off. And that's, for me, goes back down to the way that the VAR has been implemented in this country in terms of the lack of investment. Because if they're working off just that one camera angle, then how on earth are you going to get a decision made in that instance where you actually can't clearly see what part of the Livingston defender slash player you should be drawing a line off against? It just seems maddening. And in that type of scenario there, you would have thought that the on-field decision should stand, and the on-field decision was goal.
Well, that's what I was getting at, that if the on-field decision when Miowski sticks the ball in the back of the net is the linesman sticks his flag up, then you maybe say, all right, fair enough, they can't say conclusive that he's onside, so therefore, yeah, no goal. But yeah, like you say, the on-field decision is that Miowski has scored, it was a perfectly legitimate goal. And you know, this kind of, I mean, you talk about the lack of investment, this is just something that's gone on beyond the Tony Macaroni. I mean, I think of always that Celtic call, like St Johnston, the offside call for like Jot, I think it was, and the decision is made from roughly like a 45 degree angle from the corner of the stadium. And it's no better,
yeah,
really.
From opposite half as well.
Yeah,
from the opposite half.
And it's like, it's no like greater than Aberdeen or Easter Road or Tynecastle. So it just goes again for me at the point, like, if you're not going to invest to have the technology in its proper locations, having enough ability to scrutinize decisions, we don't need it.
Yeah. And it just, again, it hampers the full value of the sport from a spectator perspective. I mean, I tweeted out on Friday night. I went to go see Sporting Club Firenze against Boavista on Friday night, and VAR is just as much an impediment to the game in Portugal as it is here. The one thing I would say, though, is that they do appear to at least be trying to invest in allowing the spectators to have at least an understanding of what's going on. Like, Firenze, it's quite a small stadium. There was a screen there at least explaining, you know, what was going on. I think that's what was happening. I don't speak Portuguese, but it looked like that was what was happening. There was two VAR incidents in the opening 45 minutes. And what was also quite interesting was that the referee was mic'd up in a kind of NFL style after he did the VAR call and kind of came back to the centre of the pitch and announced what his decision was. Well, again, I presume that's what he was doing. I don't want to be Portuguese. Maybe he was just having a fucking laugh about something. I don't know. But at least from there, at least you saw them trying to explain what was happening to the support base. Whereas if you're at the Tony Macaroni, how many times has it happened to us this season at Pitodre where you're standing there like, I've got no idea what the fuck A, they're looking for, and B, why this is taking so long?
Yeah, I agree. I think that just causes frustration with the amount of times we've been at Pitodre in particular. The play continues and everyone's either one of two things. Everyone's screaming for something to be looked at and it's not clear that it is. And then all of a sudden it stops and it comes up on the board. Or then you get the other way around where you're like, oh, there's nothing to see there. And then all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, the referee stopped. They're all stopping. They're checking the VAR. And other than, you know, whatever the stadium can put up on the screen, potential foul play, whatever, you've no idea. And then the referee's chatting to his crew are like, yeah, we weren't watching either. I don't know. Flip a coin here. It's not really clear at all. And then even when it is and a decision's made, I guess sometimes you look at it and you're like, okay, that's fine. I thought that was the right call at the time. But you never really, you know, nothing's ever actually explained or justified in the moment. It's just decision given or not given. And then away we go. So, but I don't really know how you resolve this issue, because before all of this, everyone's, they're idiots, don't know what they're doing, they're missing stuff. So kind of like, okay, well, we'll bring the technology in now. But it's only ever going to take, sometimes it does feel like it takes too long, but I guess my point is it's never going to be instant.
Oh, it's never going to be instant. I think people
who and I don't know how you, but what do you want to do though? You know, it's a difficult one. If you say, right, okay, you've got a minute to make a decision, you're just going to get duff decisions made because people are like, shit, I don't want to make a decision, or yeah, I'll just pick something. I don't really know how you actually resolve this. I thought VAR would help for the likes of offside, because I thought that would be a bit more like, yeah, it is or it isn't.
Yeah.
You know, that's not, I didn't think they would be as subjective, whereas foul play or a card or something, that's different because people have a different view on what should and shouldn't be tolerated. But it's making a hash of the decisions that I thought it would help with.
I think what you're seeing now, though, is that difference in terms of investment in the technology as well. Because down south, for example, certainly in offside decisions, they appear to have really like sorted this in the sense of having multiple different camera angles from which they can make the call. To get away from that instance that we just saw on Saturday, where you're relying on one camera angle where you can't actually see where the fuck you meant to draw a line to begin with. Like, that's just nonsense.
It's just, it's that's ridiculous. Just half-baked. But it sums up the stupidity and the incredibleness, if that's even a proper word, of
the cinch
of the game up here. You know, I said, well, we get the technology. Well, I don't know, but we just get a half-assed job that'll cause more problems. That sounds about right.
Speaking about VAR reviews, just have you ever seen a man go whiter quicker than John Beaton when he was asked to go to the monitor to look at Conor Goldson's handball on Sunday?
I mean, even the most staunch of man could not deny that Conor Goldson's attempt at the Judas effect was undeniably a penalty kick. Yeah, he did not look overly impressed. I think, does he tell someone to fuck off afterwards?
It looks Goldson like, for putting him in that situation.
It looks like it.
Probably Nick Walsh, he's probably fucking raging about it. I was just like, I've never seen a guy just turn that white that quick. Absolutely incredible scenes. But ultimately, again, it is a decision that, you know, rightly or wrongly, it's kind of cost us a bit. I do feel this season we've probably been on the wrong end of more of these borderline calls than on the right side of them. Maybe that's just a biasness kicking in, but it's kind of infuriating a little bit again from Saturday, because results kind of a bit funny in the league over the course of the weekend. St Johnstone picking up a win at Hibs, which maybe I don't think a lot of people would have seen. Motherwell coming back from 2-0 down to win at the swimming pool in Dundee. County getting beat again, so that still helped. I mean, it ultimately meant that we did move 1 point further away from North County in 11th. I can't believe we haven't looked at that as being some sort of positive out of the course the weekend. But it does mean that St Johnstone's win at Easter Road does move us to within, moves them, sorry, to win 3 points as well. So Motherwell move 2 points clear in 8th. Gav, I mean, let's be honest, Cody Rhodes finished his story last night. We just want this story to finish, don't we?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think I saw someone emailed us from wanting to do like a little discussion about Aberdeen Football Club from a Stockport County perspective, I think. And I guess the final question is, what are your hopes for the season? And it's basically to end. If the season could just end tomorrow, then finito. Yeah, I'm good with it. Disappointing, because like, Graham and I talked about this, that if results went our way, and I'm mainly thinking about Ross County losing to Kilmarnock, which they did, and if we beat Livingston, that's then a 9-point gap, and I'm pretty certain that secures our Scottish Premiership status. We move 7 points clear now. I think it'll be a big ask for County to...
I don't see us
turn that over.
7 points now.
But yeah, it would have just been a nice, like, it would have felt very, very comfortable going into the split with that 9-point gap, and to come away for the second time in a season with a 0-0 draw against by far and away the worst side in the league is very disappointing.
Jamal George has got 6 clean sheets this season, of which 2 of them have come against Aberdeen. So we account for, I think, if the maths is right, 33.3% of his clean sheets this season.
Graham, can you verify that?
And I'll have to go to VAR, so come back next Sunday.
But it's, I think we're probably okay now, because I think County play Rangers next weekend in their final game before the split. So bare minimum, even if we get beat by Dundee, we're still 7 points clear of them. I think it's unlikely County take anything off Rangers at Dingwall. I don't see County making up 7 points.
But we're almost at this point where everyone's so shit. I mean,
anything could happen.
Well, partly anything could happen, but you'd have, you know, if that plays out like you're suggesting at the weekend, 5 games to go, they'd have to win at least 3 to overturn you if we don't pick up anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've, like, how are they going to win that many games in 5 versus what they've done all season? Yeah. So it's almost the fact that no one else is very good.
Yeah.
Might bail us out here.
I think the biggest frustration for me about the weekend is that I think it potentially still delays a new managerial appointment just that little bit further. I think if we were 9 points clear, right. I think there's a very strong chance that something happens before the split in terms of a managerial appointment, whether or not it's somebody who comes in to manage during the split, or it's just an announcement that they will be here in the summer, but we know who it's going to be, and they're kind of going to be watching from afar for the last 5 games.
Yeah,
I think it probably maybe just kicks that down the road a little bit further. Because
I think you're right. I think every week that goes by and we don't basically either get this wrapped up or as good as get this wrapped up, if anyone is seriously contemplating this and they're not...
And his name is Jimmy Thielen.
Well, basically, if the club is still in dialogue, then you know that they're not going anywhere else other than you. And if you're still got a job or whatever, you can afford to ride this out for another period, you'd wait until it's a slam dunk, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. I don't see why you wouldn't. I mean,
it
would be madness to not do that. It would be insane on a number of different levels for a manager. And let's move on to that now. Let's talk about this, because again, it's another week's gone past, another week with no manager installed. The rumour, the innuendo, still will suggest that Jimmy Thielen is still the man as far as Aberdeen are concerned, still our number one target. I think he is keen on the role, providing we're still a Scottish Premiership outfit. There's things that need to be sorted out with Elfsborg, I think, in terms of compensation levels, but I think Thielen is definitely interested in the gig. Graham, I mean, Gav typed the notes up for tonight. So anything you'd like to talk about, just some of the comments of Neil Warnock about his time at Aberdeen and why he decided to quit? Or have we given Neil Warnock a bit too much airtime on this podcast over the last little while? And
I think we have given that a bit too much airtime, and this is exactly everything that's wrong with it. He's still a thing. People are still giving him airtime, and he should just be told to fuck off and stay fucked off.
Which is pretty much what Plymouth Argyle appeared to have done in the
guy's in abs. Yeah.
Are you aware of what you said, though, just before we move on?
I've seen he was crying about all the data stuff.
And us taking them all in from abroad.
Those bloody foreigns, eh? Fucking hell, look what it's done to us. Yeah, the guy's just an idiot. But he's not doing anything other than being Neil Warnock.
No.
It's the absolute buffoons that run our club that thought this is a good idea. So my beef's actually not with Warnock. He's not changed.
No,
this is a man who will never change, as his comments make my case. But the people that run our club thought this is a good idea.
This is class.
I think of all the time we've been doing this, but this is 164 episodes, I've never been more right on anything. And it will probably never happen again, so I'm going to enjoy this moment.
I don't know, I think you called out J. Emmanuel Thomas pretty early.
Come on, that wasn't a bold call.
No, Graham was on the jet train, or the jet plane, should I say, possibly the early stages. But yeah, with Neil Warnock from the very... very word go, you were completely opposed.
I think my favorite thing about that
much like Neil Warnock as opposed to the single market.
Well, what single market are we talking about? If it's just
and as Tom Watt correctly pointed out, by the way, yeah, in what fucking universe was the data playing a part in Junior Hoylett being signed by Aberdeen? How does he fit into our player trading model exactly?
He fits in there because Neil's still got his number, his old Nokia. Well, obviously not. That's a foreign brand. I don't know if there was a British equivalent.
I bet you Neil was straight into Stephen Gunn, being like, right, plug this into your fancy computer.
I've got a floppy disk of all my players.
Here's a filter available, yes, no. Boom. Filter by alphabet. I only want players with that who begin with the letter H. There he is. Down the data front. Anyway, yeah, let's see what happens this week, I guess, on the manager front. I've got a funny feeling not much will happen this week until things are sorted out from a premiership status.
I think, yeah, like Graham and I, we talked about this last week after the win, and we generally thought like a new manager coming in, especially if they're in a job right now, doing well, they're either going to want to see the season out, or you know they're going to want to know where Aberdeen are, and whether that's worst came to worst, would still be an attractive proposal to a lot of managers. I'm convinced we're going to be safe in this in the Scottish Premiership, and then Jimmy Teelan's refusal to rule out the possibility of making the move definitely intrigues me. So I'm a little bit more excited than I was 7 days ago.
All right, let's quickly move on to some other news then this week. I guess other biggest piece of news that came out obviously during the course of the week was just the fact that the Quines are going to get to return to play Pittodrie for a third time. That's going to take place on Tuesday, the 30th of April, against Montrose and SWPL1, a 7:30 p.m. kickoff for that one. Obviously, they'll try to hope for a healthy attendance there. Ticket pricing fairly attractive, as £6 for a season ticket or DNA members, £8 an adult, free for under 16s. And then if you rock up on match day, it's a tenner entry and then still free entry for under. It's a third homecoming fixture for the Quines at Pittodrie as well. Let's hope they get a decent attendance along for that one. On to the young team. Busy week for the young team, taking on both sides of the Arse Cheeks youth. This, can you say that? I'm not sure if them.
It got said.
That felt it was very said. Inappropriate.
It did, didn't it?
Maybe. That felt pretty blue.
Anyway, first, a 4-4 draw with Sevco Youth on Tuesday at Cormac Park. Goals from Fraser Mackey, Alfie Stewart and Cammy Wilson for the Young Dons in that one. And then 3 days later, a big win at Lennoxton after taking on Celtic. After going down a goal down after 15 minutes, the Dons young team rallying. Goals from Cammy Wilson, a double from Cammy Wilson, sorry, and then a minute later, Fraser Mackey sealing that away win. Special mention for Fletcher Boyd, who claimed a hat-trick of assists in that one as the Dons took all 3 points back up the road to Aberdeen. We just touched on the Quines. No game for them this weekend. Pass up next for them is a home game at the Balmoral against Hamilton Accies on the 14th. On the loan watch really quickly, Kieran Nguyen at Park Thistle, not off the bench. Thistle drew 1-1 with Dunfermline Athletic. Alfie Babbage playing the full 90 as Kelty beat Queen of the South 2-1 at Palmerston. I've not looked at this in a while. Are Queen of the South in real danger still at the bottom of that league? Or are they kind of, no, they've kind of rallied from that? No, only 3 points clear of the playoff spot, so that'd be quite an achievement.
I think to say that Queen of the South have rallied at any point this season would be a gross exaggeration.
Yeah, maybe they just have been playing a little bit too much on the old PlayStation. But yeah, they're only 3 points clear, I noticed, of the playoff spot. That would be quite some doing by Marvin Bartley to take down. Are Queens the only professional outfit left in that league? Well, Falkirk
and Hamilton.
Hamilton, probably.
And Cove.
Cove are semi-pro, aren't they?
They went pro in the summer, didn't they?
I thought
they were still a mixture, but I have been wrong before. Not about Warnock, but I have been wrong before.
Anyway, we digress. Finlay Marshall at Edinburgh City, his game with Montrose is abandoned due to high winds. Lovely stuff. Dylan Laupin at Forth Athletic, like Ngwenya, had to settle on the bench with no game time as Forth were beaten 2-0 by Dumbarton. Alfie Stewart, Peterhead, a start for him, 69 minutes under his belt as Peterhead drew 2-2 with Bonnyrigg Rows. Gav, this is absolutely top-notch
where
stuff
do you
here.
Guys...
Fuck
where
me.
Do you find this stuff?
Gav, I mean, Jesus, I leave you with one job to do.
Where do you find this kind of information?
Google is your friend.
The dark web.
Yes, the dark web to find out how Formartin United lined up last weekend. No idea there, Gav. Nice one. Finlay Murray, Tara United. No idea either, apparently. Kevin Hanratty's game against Bucky Thistle was Ken Gav's written. They're playing on Monday, apparently, and that's as far as we've got to.
According to the Highland League fixture website.
Excellent. There we go. Brendan Hamilton. Gav knows this one because he was there at Banks AD. Full 90 minutes at left back for Brendan Hamilton. Banks AD came in with a 2-1 win over Huntley at Spain Park, where Blair McKenzie played the full 90 minutes as well for Blair McKenzie. How did the two loanies do, Gavin, in your opinion in that one? Or were you too busy getting tucked into a pie and looking at the Don's feed for Twitter?
The chicken pie at Banks AD is worth a look, I will say that much. Good game. Very tightly contested. Huntley were probably the better team and we'll be wondering how they didn't come out with anything to show for it. Blair McKenzie played at the left side of a back three for Huntley, and you know, I thought he did well enough. Big guy and good left foot on him. So definitely a good option if we can get him developed and get him into the first team. And Brendan Hamilton, a difficult outing, I would say, for Brendan, as was for most of the Banks D back line. Their goalkeeper had a lot of work to do. But good entertaining game, good value for money, and there was a proper fight at the end of the game. So
Lovely stuff.
So Huntley, free kick, lay the ball into the box, keeper catches it. Huntley player comes in about 2 seconds later, absolutely wipes out the goalkeeper. Cue full-blown, full-team stramash in the Banks AD goal, which ended in two Banks AD players getting sent off and no Huntley players.
Lovely. Just what you
Excellent.
Want. See what I'm doing next week.
It's not an understatement to say that the referee had no control of this game. I don't have high hopes for the next generation of referees if they're being bred in the Highland League.
Jaden Richardson, Colchester United, no place once again in the matchday squad for Jaden as Colchester went down by 2-1 against Deadpool United. Anthony Stewart and the MK Dons. Why are we still doing this? Probably for the same reasons we're still paying him. Vicente Bajouin came on as an early sub as Emin came back from a goal down to win by 2-1 against Young AZ Alkmaar. And then Papi Habib Gay, second half substitute as Christiansund drew 1-1 with Kfum in the Norwegian Elite Serien. There we go. Right, so let's move on to talk about Dundee.
That's easier than saying their actual name.
What is their actual name?
Kameraten Oslo.
Lovely stuff. There we go.
12th in the Elite Serien.
Yes, there we go. Right, let's talk about Dundee at the weekend quickly. Because, fuck it, I've got other things to do tonight, like unpack and go to my bed.
Maybe.
So, final match of the regular season coming up on Saturday. Dundee visiting Pittodrie for the second time this season. Of course, Dundee claiming all 3 points at Den's last time out against us after Neil Warnock had just walked out on us and we were all feeling very sorry for ourselves.
Walked out? No. We were just about to appoint a manager, remember? So he stepped aside.
Oh, of course, yes. Imminent. Advanced stages.
Yeah.
Yeah, all those things. Of course, our earlier fixture with Dundee at Pittodrie finished 1-1 at Pittodrie, a draw that ultimately proved to be the final chapter in Barry Robson's story as Aberdeen manager. Quite how it lasted that long, I've still got no fucking idea, but hey, there we go. Dundee, still kind of a bit patchy so far this season, coming in to this one off the back of, well, what was on Saturday a very disappointing defeat to Motherwell at Dens Park after them taking all of the attention away from the gruesome twosome in the lead up to the weekend with their absolute hilarity that was the Dens Park pitch. But all for nothing, as it turned out, the Dundee squandered a 2-0 lead to get beat 3-2 by Motherwell, which is quite a fucking feat when you think about it. They will, of course, play another rearranged fixture on Wednesday night prior to visiting Pittodrie. So who knows, maybe mentally, maybe physically, Dundee could be in a potentially vulnerable state, especially because they're kind of on the brink at the moment of collapsing from a top six position, it's fair to say. They got a bit fortunate that the Hibs also dropped points at the weekend. They do have that still to play for. Obviously, they currently do sit six in the league. Hibs and Motherwell both breathing down their neck. Two wins, two defeats and a draw in the last five. Luke McCowan, top scorer with 9 goals across all competitions, as well as being their joint top assist maker. Lyle Cameron, obviously earning a lot of plaudits for his performances. He and McCowan are definitely the players that we need to be looking out for. Certainly, they impressed, I think it's fair to say, in the match at Dens most recently as well. So, Tony Docherty, we've talked about a lot. He's done a good job at Dundee, it's fair to say, this season. I don't think a lot of people would have been expecting Dundee to be anywhere near the mix for top six at this stage of the season. So he's done a hell of a job just to be in that consideration, but does kind of feel they're maybe just starting to fumble and stumble just a little bit as the finishing line gets towards them. But we've certainly seen from Dundee this season, I think it still stands up to scrutiny. I think I haven't checked the data properly today, but I'm pretty certain they still remain the league's top scorers when it comes from set plays. We saw them exploit that against us at Pittodrie earlier in the season. They gave us a bit of a doing at Dens Park, it's fair to say, recently as well. We didn't help ourselves. I thought it was one of our worst performances of the campaign, of a lot of bad performances as well. But I mean, what do we expect Saturday? We still have a lot to play for. They've got a lot to play for. I expect Dundee will come up here and have a go at us. Why wouldn't you if you're Dundee?
Yeah, I think that's fair. It'd be pretty silly of them not to. I mean, they might end up in a situation where they need to, because I guess it's kind of that final game shootout, if you like, for the top six. And even if they don't need to, why would you not? Because if you don't need to, because you've got your top six, go and give your fans something to enjoy. And let's be honest, we're a team that can be attacked.
We are, indeed. I mean, I think they'll definitely be hurting off the back of losing that game to Motherwell, as you say, being 2 goals up to lose by 3 goals to 2. So Tony Dock will have to do some work to pick them up. And with Wednesday against Rangers, you know, even if Dundee win, it'll take a mammoth effort to get that. And if it goes the other way and they take a bit of a scudding, then it'll take a lot out of them physically and mentally as well. So it feels like a good opportunity, a good time to play Dundee. And
hang on, that's usually my line, Gav.
Stealing your gimmick, brother. So, yeah, I think definitely, yeah, like you say, a lot to play for. I think a win here, like you say, Ross County playing Rangers will put to bed any concerns about our Scottish Premiership status. And, you know, maybe just a little bit of this is probably overly dramatic, but we've played pretty badly against Dundee in both games this season. So a chance to maybe just right some wrongs and get a win to take us into the bottom six, which, by the way, I'm happy to just call it at that point. I'm not that fussed about finishing top of the bottom six. So yeah, you can just like give us like a draw for every game after that.
I guess importantly for us as well, though, is that I still think we're okay now. I think the 7 points we'll be all right with. But if we were just to be able to make that to a 10-point gap, then that does, I think, just solidifies that done and dusted perspective. But there's also the fact we've got the Cup semi-final coming up the week after as well. So it is important that we do pick up a win. I mean, the thing we need to remember as well, the result on Saturday against Livingston was disappointing on a number of different levels. But it does mean that we still have gone, you know, 3 games unbeaten in that run, which is not something we've kind of been able to do a lot of this season, is just put together little runs of not losing games. It's a clean sheet, and again, it's not many of those have taken place this season. And I know we shouldn't be looking at a game at Livingston, who are the worst team in the league, and saying that's a positive, but you need to try and find the positives.
Are you?
Just signing my contract right now. But you kind of have to take those little positives, don't you? These little chinks that come out of these types of out of these games. And the Celtic defence, if you watch the Old Firm game on Sunday, that's a defence that can be got at. It would just be interesting to see if we actually decide to turn up at Hampden and have a go at a team for once in our fucking lives, wouldn't it?
How many goals have Celtic stuck past us this season?
Gary doesn't have enough fingers and toes for this one.
How many did we concede in the... Was it six?
When
we
three in the first one. Was it six or seven at Park, Celtic Park?
I don't think it was seven, was it? I think it was six. It was 3-0 and then we conceded three in the last... Well, we conceded three in injury time, didn't we, I think? I need to go back and check now. Fucking hell. I
believe so, yes.
I guess the point is, it's quite a lot. So, maybe their defence can be got at.
The problem is ours.
And they've got some decent attackers.
For some reason, I think Celtic might be thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's deal with that particular, you know, emotional damage when it comes.
Okay, fair enough.
Focus on Dundee. I mean, like I said, we've only got, three or four games at Pittodrie left this season. It's been a long, old slog of a campaign for everyone that's gone to Pittodrie or travelled to support this team. So let's just give people that have paid a lot of money for their season tickets and will rock up and take time out of their day a good day and get a win against Dundee.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. Predictions? Let's quickly just get this over and done with.
I think Dundee will come at us because I think they'll need to win the game to have a chance of winning their top six place. So they could see it being quite a back and forth kind of game. It'll be goals. I'm going to call it a 3-2 win to Aberdeen.
Yeah, Dundee kind of have to win, actually, when you look at their... Because they've got the worst goal difference between themselves, Hibs and Motherwell, but quite some distance, actually.
That's my thinking.
Yeah, so they need to win the game. They can't rely on hopefully just getting a point or even just being able to stay up by virtue of the fact they've got points on the board against Motherwell. So, yeah, going to be interesting. Graham?
Let's say 1-1.
Although, no, I've just... It was Motherwell play Hibs.
Oh.
Which does kind of change things a little bit. Doesn't change that much. It still means they kind of have... Yeah, they still kind of need to win the game, really.
And obviously, if Dundee beat Rangers in midweek, then top six is theirs. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Nah, I don't think it'll happen. I think the way that the Old Firm game came and finished on Sunday, I think I could see Rangers winning that game quite comfortably. And then, yeah, moving on from there. Sorry, Graham, did you give me a prediction there? Or did I jump
one,
in?
One.
One apiece. I'm going to say we get one over Dundee at long last this season. Aberdeen 2, Dundee 1. We'll score a late goal just to fuck them up. And Motherwell will somehow sneak up in the top six, which would be fucking remarkable scenes given how absolutely pish they've been for most of the season. But there we go.
It'll be one hell of a way to round off the Theo Bear season.
It really would be. It really will. Right, well, that'll do us for this half.
Thank you.
Lovely stuff. Join us after the break. We're going to talk with David McGregor, aka Broken Chanter, to talk about his new album and talk about his thoughts on the Dawn season so far. Looking for the best donuts in the northeast of Scotland? Look no further than Dough & Co. Made fresh every day and topped right in front of you at their 40-seater cafe on Belmont Street in the heart of Aberdeen. They make the perfect gift or the perfect pre-match stop-off with a full selection of bagels and hot and cold drinks. If you're listening from home, why not place your order for one of their Dough & Co. stops? There are over 28 drop-off locations across the region, delivering through the northeast on a weekly basis. Follow at Your Donut Shop across socials to stay up to date. Come on, you Reds. Welcome back to the ABZ Football Podcast. Just a quick shout out once again to those of you who have made your contributions to the Beer and Coffee Fund in the last week or so, especially to Mark Robertson.
Mark Robertson, the tribal chief. Or is he anymore?
Not sure. Inverness Dawn.
You know who you are.
Neil Ewan,
thank you very much. A newcomer, I believe.
Yes, a newcomer who apparently really enjoyed the Lee Scott interview. from back in the archives. So
as he should have.
As he should. Good interview. If you've not listened to it, go back
and listen to it. Good interview.
Scott B.
Scotty B. We know you.
And Grant Stephen.
Grant Stephen. Again, another familiar face.
Yeah. Top
Welcome
tier.
Welcome you to the Island of Relevancy.
Top tier. If you'd like to make your donations to the Beer and Coffee Fund, please head on over to ko-fi.com/ABZ. Football podcast is absolutely much appreciated. But now, it's been a while since we've talked music on the show, but here to have a chat about his latest album, Chorus of Doubt. It is the one and only David McGregor, aka Broken Chanter. We're going to talk about the new album, and then we're also going to talk about just where David thinks things have gone to absolute rat shit this season down AB24 way. Dave McGregor, welcome back to the ABZ Football Podcast. How's it going, mate?
It's okay. I feel like one day I'll come on this podcast under happier circumstances.
I've been saying that for 3 years now, to be fair. It's not quite happened yet, so...
Well, football-wise, it's been pretty rank. I suffered my last visit to the Tony Mac before it gets rebranded and hopefully relegated on Saturday there. So, brutal stuff.
Absolutely. It's good to have you back with us. Before we turn our attention to Don's, let's talk music. It's been a while since we've got to talk about music on this podcast. We kind of... Because of this way, the way this season has worked out, it's been so hectic with so many games. We've kind of like had to abandon a little bit of the kind of music stuff, but just didn't have the time. But let's talk about music for a little bit with you, David. Because talk about your new album, released last Friday, 5th of April, Chorus of Doubt, the third album from you under the Broken Chanter moniker. Just talk to us a little bit about kind of what can listeners expect from this one.
So yeah, it's my first for Chemical Underground as well. So it's been very nice to work with them. I've been a huge fan of theirs since I was a teenager. I recorded it last summer. It's a more kind of direct and maybe abrasive album than the first two Broken Chanter ones. But you know, it's still a pop record at its heart. I don't know. It's another reaction to the horrible world in which we find ourselves at the moment. I don't know. I think a lot of people are feeling pretty powerless about their ability to change things. And these are a number of tunes to try and soundtrack that positivity and the the love letters to the possibilities when collective and direct action is taken. You know, there's a lot of really alarming things going on in the world at the minute. You know, currently witnessing a genocide being perpetrated in real time, or watching actual Nazis come out and burn down the city, the centre of Dublin. And seems to be a lot of very negative things, and a lot of the constant churn of social media and the news cycle. Can make you feel really powerless and alone if you do want better things. It's basically about how hope is essential, and it's to try and stir up some sort of positive sentiment around those who want better things whilst also being full of tunes.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's all about as well. It's the hooks. It's all important.
Aye, there's no point in trying to convey a message if you don't do it in an accessible way.
So. Exactly. Absolutely. The title, talk to us just about that a little bit. Because, I mean, for a minute, when I first saw it, I misread it accidentally. I thought you were channeling Richard Keys and Andy Gray with the Corridor of Doubt. But Chorus of Doubt, obviously, you know, that's got lots of different meanings to a lot of different people. But for you, like, where did that title come from?
It's a lyric from the last song on the record. The song's So Much for the End of History. And the line is, a chorus of doubt is singing its greatest hits. And it's just a reflection on how there is a voice inside all of us that can perhaps belittle our attempts to improve things. You know, I think that earnestly saying, I want to try and make things better, especially in Scotland, if you're Scottish, there's a certain amount of cringe attached to earnestness and the pursuit of better things in a lot of in a lot of kind of instances. And it's just, yeah, we're all plagued by a chorus of doubt sometimes from within, from external factors as well. Like there's a deranged kind of media narrative, certainly among the Murdoch titles and Barclay titles and the centre of right and far right media in this country that has had a rightward drift in the past, you know, decade or so as well. And that adds to that chorus of doubt. You know, you are being a tofu munching, woke bedwetter and all this sort of nonsense. And the absolute kind of bad faith politics of importing meaningless culture wars from the US and trying to apply them here and finding some ground in that as well. So
we touched on it. You touched on it. You deliberately brought it up, and I was going to mention this as well. And I put this down in my notes before we even before we started recording, obviously, and then just after listening to the album on the way back from my holidays end of last week. It's a load of bollocks. It was just yesterday I came back.
Live.
There's a definite shift in terms of style in the album from the kind of last two you just touched on. It definitely feels that a little bit more immediate from the word go. Was that like a kind of deliberate stylistic choice when you set out to start writing the album? Was that something that just kind of came naturally during the kind of writing and recording process?
When I was discussing the album with the producer, Paul Savage, beforehand, before I sent in the demos, I said to him, like, well, I want a more direct record, one that's easier to kind of replicate faithfully live. Not easier to play live, but one that we can do with two guitars, bass and drums. And also, just for it to be more kind of abrasive and direct, and I was listening to a lot of post-punk, you know, Delta 5, ESG, Wire, Gang of Four, and all of that is really kind of, it has a real energy to it, you know, it's not something you can listen to passively, and I think that was the real, what we were attempting with this record was to have something that you couldn't necessarily listen to passively, something that involved you, something that grabbed you, and something that was direct in its messaging. But I mean, again, like, part of that is having the accessible tunes, the hooks, you know, the pop leanings of it. So yeah, it was to make some uneasy listening pop music, you know, and that's not to say that it's not accessible, but it's not something that you can just be passive around, I don't think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's definitely fair to say. In terms of like just the recording process as well, so you touched on the fact it's the first time you've worked with the guys at Chemical Underground, this one, working with Paul Savage, producer as well. Anything kind of different changes to the recording process this time around? Anything new you've kind of done in the studio? New tricks?
So there are fewer kind of collaborators on this one. It was mainly myself, Charlotte Printer on bass vocals, Bart Owl on guitar and vocals, and Martin Johnson on drums, with a wee guitar solo on the last song from Gav Prentice as well, who had worked on a previous album with. But yeah, it was just to have that kind of tight-knit group of musicians, not have people coming in and out and adding bits. Now, like, there was kind of we've taken off the lusher elements, the strings and the kind of the nicer bits, and just had a really well-drilled band that is... we just went for it live. So like we did a few takes of each song. So the bass, drums and guitars and all of those songs are essentially live for the most part.
Yeah.
Give it that kind of raw, direct, in your face / ears kind of approach.
Looking forward to it. You're on tour, obviously, on the 11th, starting up in Edinburgh. Before we hit the tunnels in Aberdeen on Friday night. There's still some tickets available for that one just now. Last time I checked yesterday, Dundee's Beat Generator on Saturday, and then back to Stereo in Glasgow on the 20th. More dates to follow as well, I believe, later in the year.
Yes, absolutely. We're in Aberdeen on Friday night, Friday the 12th. There are a few tickets left for that. And we're actually popping into Montrose on the way down.
Nice.
A fellow Don runs Mo Fidelity Records there, so we're doing a wee in-store in between Aberdeen and Dundee. Unfortunately, sound checking in Dundee does not allow me to be at Pittodrie on Saturday. That
might be. I was going to say, we'll come and talk about the Dons in a minute or two. Yeah, absolutely not. I'm going to try and hopefully make my way down to the tunnels as well on Friday night. One of these rare occasions where I may actually have a child-free Friday night. So we'll wait and see if that manifests itself. But looking forward to it, because as you say, the album just feels that little bit more direct and, as you say, a little bit more easily replicatable, shall we say, from a live perspective as well. So I'm looking forward to hopefully getting down to see it. Obviously, the album itself, let's just wrap up, talk about the album, available in physical format on clear vinyl and on CD and with a digital download as well, all available at brokenchanter.bandcamp.com. I'll do the sales pitch here just now. Let's go. Let's talk about the Dons, because, I mean, fucking hell, what a season it's been. Touched on the fact, obviously, you were able to get to the Tony Mac at the weekend. Been able to get along to many of the games this season so far.
In the first half of the season, yeah, it was there a lot more, like the album was in the can and didn't have any tour dates around that time. It's just been brutal.
Oh, this isn't that.
I don't know. It's been 3 and a bit years of this now, and I can't quite put my finger on what the problem is. And like, I also don't think that a sports psychologist can be that expensive to have on staff, compared to some of the wages we're paying out for players.
I'm sure Lee Richardson would be willing to do it for a knockdown fee as well, especially. I mean, we can talk about some of the lowlights, I guess, in a minute, but it's been a weird season as well, because there have been little glimmers of highlights through the campaign.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Any particular step out for you from the season?
Joe, I don't think I've had... I'm not convinced I've sat and watched us win a match this season. And genuinely, I've been to a lot, but we've only had, what, seven wins?
I was going to say, I was about to go and look at the league table there.
Yeah, so I think the most enjoyable one was Pauk away.
Yeah.
Apart from the absolute sex cases, climbing the fence, grabbing their crotches at us. That was a really enjoyable kind of away day, because we were in 20 degrees and sunshine in November. And it was a good match. I think it was a really credible performance as well. I think, in all honesty, we should have won it, and I think their second goal is exceptionally soft. Again, it's a miscommunication between the defence and Roos, and he's just kind of fallen over and let it go in.
Yeah.
Celebrating that free kick and also Duke's goal, was that will live long in the memory.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Jim McGrath lining up for a knuckleball was one of those moments where I was just like, really? Is this what's about? Okay, cool. Was expecting that. You kind of touched on it as well. I mean, like, it's hard to put a finger on where maybe things have gone wrong, but like, for you, like, where do you think the season has just gone absolutely down the shitter? Like, is there a key moment that you look at and go, that's where it just really started to go wrong?
I really, really wanted Robson to work out. Really did. I think, clearly with all of the stuff that he's done in the past, he was a club man. And what really was put the tin lid on it for me was the fact that he was seemed completely unwilling to change. There was a stubbornness, and it was like any time that we actually went to a four, we came back into games or, you know, actually controlled matches. And then we would just go back to the same five, a 3/5. And it's just... depending on how you looked at it. And it was just absolute murder. And it was just, you're going to get yourself sacked if you keep going on with this. And he...
kept doing it.
He kept doing it. And, you know, the time came. And then I think the nadir of the season, and like, unarguably, would be appointing that absolute clown, Warnock. I know that he's done a job for teams in the past, but my main issue is not whether or not he could do the job. It's more that he didn't really try. It's like he didn't take it seriously. He came up and he treated the whole thing as a great laugh.
Yeah.
Didn't talk about football at all. And his, pre-match conference, post-match conferences, it was all about sound bites and clowning about. And it made a laughing stock of the club, to be honest. And, you got to feel for the players there as well, because they are going out. That Motherwell match, that 3-1, down. I mean, like, that's just, that start lineup was absolutely criminal, what some of those players were being asked to do. It's just that has to be the worst part of the season. The worst part of a terrible season was that bizarre experiment with Warnock. And we would have got relegated if he'd stayed at the Hill. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think there's a really strong possibility we end up in that 11th spot. And then from that point on, who knows at that point? I mean, and at that point, you're in that downward trajectory, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're going to play somebody who's won a couple of games at least to get there. And it's just, yeah, it doesn't bear thinking about. I mean, perhaps, you know, the only good thing that's happened with Warnock is the fact he decided to jack it in.
I know. The relief I felt. Unusually here in Glasgow, one of my upstairs neighbours and the closest is a Dons fan as well. And he texted me going, when Warnock got a point, going, did I just hear you snap your season ticket? Echoing up the close. But I really do feel for some of the players as well, because like there have been some, I think Jamie McGrath's been amazing for us this season. Like I think he's been a real standout. Obviously, Morsky's been creating goals out of close to nothing at times. But I think the main thing is, like, we just looked so aimless on Saturday, and it's been like that for so much of the season. Just a team without a plan or a direction.
Yeah, it feels like
the halfway line.
It feels like the support base, and also it feels like a lot of the squad are at that place now where they just want the season over and just get it done and put it in the books and fuck it, we move on to next season and hope that we don't have to kind of revisit this much longer. I mean, what do you make as well of the kind of ongoing saga that is the kind of new manager hunt? I mean, it's just fucking bizarre, isn't it, that we're now, how far since Robson was emptied is it now? It was the end of January, we're now in April. But don't appear
only
to be
the
much...
end of January, it feels so much longer.
I know. And he should have gone a month before that, realistically.
Yeah,
but we're now, you know, the 9th of April, and at this moment in time, we're still no clearer, it looks like, as to who's going to take the job ongoing. It's just been a fucking disaster, hasn't it?
I'd be happy staying as is to the end of the season if it weren't for the fact that that means we'll lose the good players that we have because of the lack of certainty. I mean, if they also, Jimmy, what's his name? For the Swedish.
Jimmy Thielen.
Yes. Yeah, sorry, completely went out of my head there. Like, if that is the club's number one target, then why on earth have they dilly-dallied till the start of the season over there? And now it's just going to be all the harder to get a hold of him. I mean, at least that shows some sort of ambition, if that is who they're considering. Because some of the names that we're getting chucked out in sports sound, it's like, have you considered recycling these failures from the Scottish League? It's like, let's not do that.
Let's try and avoid it at least for one season. if we possibly can, that'd be great.
It's a farce though, and it just shows a club in real trouble, and it's the Football Monitoring Board, just as much fun as that title is, it feels like there's been so many rakes that Dave Cormack has seen clearly and then stood on them anyway, and the FMB was one of them, just saying, we've got a Football Monitoring Board, who's on it? Well, it's just us.
Cool. Good. Great stuff. Good. Thanks for that. Cheers. With a bunch of guys with no experience of top flight football, with the exception of Willie Garner 40 years ago, I think, as it turned out. It's a thing as well, because you'll get this, because you know, you with your gig, communication is so important, you know, and how you talk about things and how you set things up. That's also been the biggest failing of the club in recent years, recent weeks even, has been just this lack of communicating properly and setting themselves targets for no fucking reason. Like they didn't have to do it. Like when Warnock left, it just had to be we weren't expecting this. He's gone. We're going to take stock. We're going to have to accelerate our process. We'll be back in touch when there's some news rather than, oh, we're like imminently going to appoint someone. And you're like, okay, cool. Good stuff. Nice. Who are you? Because it turns out the definition of imminently that you're using is very different to mine.
Yeah, in geological time, it's imminent.
maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what it's...
It's the petrochemical industry's influence there. I would really have liked it if they just held their hands up and went, the last 3 years have not gone well.
Yeah.
We've rushed into a few things and that was a mistake. So we're going to take some time to make the correct choice and to do some sort of planning. Like, what's happened to this review as well that was meant to be happening?
I think I've said it before on the show. It's like, I'll donate 100 quid to the AFC Community Trust out of my own pocket if we get to see an unredacted version of that report when it's done, because you just know it's never going to happen. And it's the thing, it's the same with all these things as well. It's like, I'd like to see the terms of reference. I'd like to see what they were actually being asked to look at, you know, before you even get a chance to see whether it's actually borne any fruit or not. It's going to be interesting. I mean, in terms of the new manager piece as well, I mean, we've touched on the fact, but you don't want to recycle failed ex Scottish managers already. I mean, where is your head at? Do you have any sort of preference at all about what we try to do? Does Jimmy Tielan tickle your balls, or is it kind of,
well,
we are where we are and let's see what happens?
You know, I've heard very positive things about him, but this is the kind of thing that I would like to sit back and not really have an opinion on, because I'm not qualified to make that decision. But for me to sit back and be relaxed about that, I need to have the confidence that the people who are making that decision are qualified to do it. And it just doesn't seem like that's the case. Because it's very easy for me to criticise, like, from the stand. But, you know, if the people there who are meant to be doing a job aren't doing a job, then that's the concern for me. Like, I couldn't pick a new manager the same way, like, I couldn't play centre-back, but I'm not getting paid to do that.
You might do as good a job at centre-back as a lot of people have done this season, to be fair.
I don't know. Back in my 11s days, I saw red a lot, so I don't think I would be another Ruby with a similarly strange shaped head, to be honest.
It's weird as well, the Rubisic one. I feel like we've kind of missed him a little bit. Like, I think a lot of people are surprised at how much we've possibly missed him.
I don't want to single out anyone for criticism, but I mean, I am amazed by Jensen sometimes, or Jensen, sorry, I never know if it's a hard or a soft G, but like, sometimes he looks pretty solid. He's a, you know, Finnish international, and other days it's kind of like, I mean, I feel like I'm paying much more attention to the match than he is. And he get hooked at halftime on Saturday I'm not sure if that's because he performed a diving header clearance and absolutely shattered all of his ribs on the total Mac Park. But again, he just looked, I don't know, he looked disinterested. And there's a few players that looked disinterested. Yeah. And, you know, I thought Gartman actually had quite a solid match.
I think Gartman's actually played all right since Leaven's come back in again in the main. Yeah. Which is kind of also a bit surprising, because he really seemed to go off the boil with Warnock. But hey, fucking knows. I mean, that's everybody at that point. So
again, I just, we get a real let off as well, and like, got quite a gentle foul given in favour of Roos at the weekend when he spilled across, which could have
doesn't sound likely.
I know, but it's just, that's one thing that frustrates me. It's kind of like, again, people have off days, and I really am not appreciating his attitude towards the support when he's clapping sarcastically. You know, if I was going to clap sarcastically at thousands of people in a stand who are meant to be backing me, I would want to be doing it from a position of having an exemplary record in my position, which it's safe to say he's not had. No. I really felt for Mosky as well. Like, again, VAR is absolutely killing this game. It's not possible from where that camera is to say if that was offside or not. It didn't look offside. There was no lines available on Sports Scene, and it's just he was cutting a lonely figure all day, and it felt like a just reward, because it was absolutely brutal. It was not as brutal as the 0-0 draw there on the opening day
of the season. I
saw that a lot of people were saying that one wasn't as bad, because at least there was the hope that it would get better. But that is genuinely possibly the worst professional football match I've ever paid into. Closely followed by St Mirren away the following week, the 2-2.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking of just buying another tea so I could scald myself with it to fume something. Yeah.
Like myself, so I don't have to deal with this any longer. It feels like it's been one of those seasons, doesn't it? I mean, it's been one of those runs, with the exception of that little purple patch between February and May last season. It's been, all in all, an entirely miserable existence if you're an Aberdeen fan for the last 3 years. So
I don't want to, like, again, like, McGrath has been great. Miowski has been great. I think Devlin has been excellent for the most part. I think he's been there's been a couple of wee mistakes. A couple of mistakes that have led to goals. But like, say the one against Celtic where that back header, he almost makes it back. He then makes up for the rest of the game by having a really excellent showing and, you know, absolutely bursting his arse to get to everything. You know, he sets up Duke and Pauk. He's like, this is just from when I've actually watched them, and he always seems to really give it his all. And I think that had we had a better season, then it would be nice to talk about these kind of individuals. And but just as a, and again, like McKenzie again was excellent on Saturday, but when there's three or four players who are performing in a team of 11, it's just they're on a hiding to nothing, and then the head comes down for them as well, and it's,
and their mistakes then become magnified as well. That's part of the problem. Because, and you see with Devlin, I mean, I've been a pretty strong advocate for Devlin this season. I think there has been the mistakes there, but I think in the main he's played all right. And we touched on the show, he's played an inordinate amount of football this season, more than he's ever played in his career before. And he's not, you know, he's not a spring chicken either. And that goes back to the lack of depth in the squad, that, you know, Robson had options, chose not to use them in that area for reasons that I think we can probably all guess, in the sense that people who were brought in to be backup simply weren't good enough to be there. And it's just a squad and a fan base and a club that are just limping towards the finishing line and just hoping that if we can just finish 10th, that will be great. Thank you very much.
I just want it over. I really felt for Devlin on Saturday as well, because I do genuinely think he's been one of our best players this season. And I know that's, and I don't mean that to be damning with faint praise either. I think he's like been played in that position that would have, in one of those wonderful long ago McKinney seasons, like he would have done a great job then as well. But like there was this absolutely hammered boy for the stand at full time, hurling abuse at the players, and Devlin was just standing there kind of looking at him. Because you know the Tony Mac, you can. You can see if somebody's not been using Head and Shoulders. It's that intimate. So it's he just looked kind of just baffled and a touch hurt. It's like, this is absolute murder. Because it's like, what are you shouting at him for?
Yeah.
He was demanding answers at this point. It's like, well,
you're not going to get them from the right back. You know,
he's done the job he was meant to do today, you know. And yeah, so it was just, everyone's frustrated, everyone's miserable, and I really want the season off.
Fun and games, and I think that seems like an entirely apt place to wrap things up, mate. Listen, it's been great to have you back again. Fingers crossed we can get you back on the show at some point where we can talk about something positive on the footballing front. But just to roll back around again, just for anyone who has forgotten already in the 20 minutes that we've been talking, new album out last week, still available to purchase online, brokenchanter.bandcamp.com. It is an absolute belter, and I'm not just saying that because you're here. It is lovely, lovely stuff.
Yeah, that's very kind. But you know, this will only be the second time that I've missed a trip to Hampden in the past like 10 years or something, because I'll be playing in Edinburgh Record Store Day before going back to Glasgow for the show that night. Yeah, the other time I had to be dragged out of a pub in Leipzig, spitting feathers from the 2-1 Scottish Cup final, because I had to go and sound check there. And it was absolutely raging.
To be fair, it could be worse. You could have been in the ground at that point, because it was heartbreaking on a number of different levels. Anyway, Dave McGregor, a.k.a. Broken Chanter, thanks again, mate. We'll catch you on Friday night, hopefully at the Tunnels. If you can't do the Tunnels in Aberdeen on Friday, there's the 11th in Edinburgh. Saturday, which is what, the 13th in Dundee, or the Montrose Record Store on the way past, and then the Stereo in Glasgow on the 20th.
Yeah, in fact, come along after celebrating our win at Hampden on the 20th to the Stereo in Glasgow.
Absolutely. Great shout. Dave McGregor, great to have you back again.
Thanks so much.
Stand free.
Stand free. Cheers, man.
So there we go. Lovely stuff. Broken Chanter's new album, Chorus of Doubt, available now. We'll put the link in the episode description where you can go and buy it in physical or digital formats. Broken Chanter also live at the Tunnels on Friday night. Tickets still available at skiddle.com, or if you are not in the Aberdeen area, David and the band are out on tour across the country. So have a look at his link tree, which again will pop into the episode description for tickets for gigs in your area. That'll do us, I think, for the show this evening. Chaps, join us next time for episode 165, where we will look back upon the final game of the regular season against Dundee on Saturday, and then we will put ourselves through the emotional ringer one more time as we try to convince ourselves we can go to Hampden and beat Celtic in the Scottish Cup semi-final. We'll see you then. Stand free.
This episode of the ABZ Football Podcast was brought to you in association with Siberia Bar and Hotel on Belmont Street, Aberdeen. Head into the bar, quote the phrase ABZ Pod, that's ABZ Pod, for a £3 pint of Foster's, £4 pint of Moretti, or £5 pint of Fierce any day of the week, including match days. Siberia is open 7 days a week, all year round, and the bar is located only 30 seconds walk from the nearest bus stop, taking supporters to Clodagh Stadium for free on match days. Come on, you Reds.